I felt like I was ready for the NBA a couple years sooner than I probably was.
Welcome to Hoop Nerds with Billy Kegler, presented by the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association. We talk to coaches, athletes, and more to learn from their stories and apply learning lessons to improve each individual and stimulate growth for your program, team, staff, and self. Follow along as we explore success and failure en route to improving the game of basketball.
Before we jump in today, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. I've been associated with their products for a few years now, and I'm really impressed by their innovative and user-friendly shooting machines. They also are great people with tremendous customer service. It's no wonder why they have become the preferred choice among top programs around the country and world. I am very grateful for their support of the show. Make sure to check them out at drdishbasketball.com and at Dr. Dish B-Ball on social media. Be sure to mention WBCA when ordering your next Dr. Dish to save an extra $300 off any commercial purchase. Greg Steemsmall, welcome to the Hoop Nerds podcast.
Thanks for letting me be here.
I'm happy to have you. Let's start by you sharing with our audience your journey through basketball and how it's led you to what you're doing now.
Oh, man. It started right after college. 4 years at the University of Wisconsin, was fortunate enough to play there right in my backyard. Then I proceeded to, sometimes I got to think about this to keep it all straight. I started out in, was playing for a team in Turkey, started in Turkey, signed a 2-year deal there, ended up getting bought out by a team in South Korea, second half of that season, finished my rookie year in Korea, came back, signed with the G League team, went to one game, only played like 15 minutes. The next season went back to Korea, got cut after about 2 months, came back, played a full G League season, got called by Minnesota Timberwolves for my summer league rights, basically played summer league, went to training camp in Cleveland that following year. Wasn't going to make that team, asked to get released, went back to Turkey for the full season. And after that, the following season was the lockout year, I believe. So we were looking for something where I could get out of my European contract in order to go to an NBA camp. And that ended me up in the country of Georgia. They didn't pay me for 6 weeks. I left before our first regular season game. They still owe me some money that I've never seen and I never will. Then I signed back with the G League team. Played in the Pan Am games, came back, started the G League season, and then the lockout ended, and I go to Boston for camp, and the NBA dream kind of really began there, picked up, became a reality there. Played in Boston for that year, then Minnesota for a year, New Orleans for a year, then up in Toronto, and then went to training camp a couple times after that, but it was playing days were kind of over by then. And took a couple of years off, had to figure out what I was going to try to do. And then I was actually at the Wisconsin-Minnesota game. And I think it was after the third or fourth time that I jumped up to yell at the refs or the players. I kind of like looked at my wife and I was like, I think I need to get back into basketball. Kind of had a realization moment and started exploring a little bit, some options, and had an opportunity to come up with the Timberwolves in the video room, knowing I was going to have to put in some hours and kind of cut my teeth, but it was a way into the back into the NBA. So I jumped on that, spent 2 years with the Wolves. And then at the end of last season, kind of got a blind side. We're going a different direction type of conversation. And a few weeks later, I got a call from these guys in San Antonio that offered me a position here, similar to what I was doing in Minnesota. And we picked up everything from Minnesota and moved south. So it was a long answer to your short question. Here we are about, almost 15 plus years later.
As the basketball journey goes, right? You just never know where the chips will land.
It's been wild. I always like to tell people that, from a small town in Wisconsin, in my first year as a pro, I got to make a complete revolution around the world. It took me about 7 months to do so, but I started in Chicago and headed east and kept going till I came back to Chicago 6 or 7 months later with the revolution under my belt. So
tell me about your first time coaching and a story that sticks with you. Because you mentioned being at the Badger game and being excited, knowing you wanted to get back into it and then getting involved with the Timberwolves. But it may have been before that. What's yes. your first time coaching memory?
So I actually coached the Randolph High School Summer League a couple times. Trying to think, I think I was just out. It must have been just out of college. And so I think Coach Heffley had just retired. Maybe he was still even coaching, but anyways, I coached him in a couple of tournaments and a couple of leagues when I was still I was around. And I just remember, you know, obviously like my dad was our coach growing up, and I kind of asked him one time, I was like, "Dad, like, what do you say in timeouts? Like, I feel like you get 2 minutes sometimes. Like, I don't know what I'm going to say, fill those 2 minutes up." And we had a really good group of guys, those young guys that just played hard and kind of the Randolph style. Like, we played kind of the right way. And I remember we were up by like 15 or something one time, and they didn't get back on defense, like two or three possessions. They're like, "Call timeout." And I'm just laying into these guys, and all the refs like, "All right, like, gotta go, like rushing them back to the court. And I kind of remember looking at my dad in the stands, and he's kind of laughing. He's like, "You're up 15. You call timeout just to chew the guys out." And that time to me flew by. Like, I could have swore that I just called the timeout, and they're asking for the guys to get back on the court. But it was just kind of one of those natural things where the stuff comes to you as when you're on the sideline, you see so much of the game. There's only a short amount you can give back to them. And that timeout particularly was, I wasn't too happy. And we were up by like 15, and live and learn, I guess, a little bit of a.
Well, the standard's the standard, whether you're up 15 or down 15, you're playing to your standard the way it is.
That's exactly what I told those guys. And yeah, it's just, that one sticks with me though, for sure.
All right. So you mentioned the Randolph way. So I want to dive into a little bit about your change in philosophy or theory. So you were brought up in Randolph, Wisconsin. It's notorious for a certain style, way of basketball, very, very successful. I'm curious, over your college career, professional career, now coaching career, what's something that you learned more information about that you changed your mind about in coaching?
Honestly, I think there's more that I've learned where we were doing it right at the high school level, almost, you know, more than there's been things that I would change. At the time, we thought it was, you know, we never could figure out some of these rules. You know, we weren't allowed to wear black socks. We had to be somewhat clean shaven. We couldn't wear t-shirts under our jerseys. Like, all some of these little details where we kind of were like, we'd fight against it at times, or sometimes you stick with it. But there was definitely like these things we questioned as kids. And now you look back and it's like, well, the routine, the structure, like the team first type of atmosphere was kind of like something that we were taught early on and we built on. And as I've gone throughout my professional career, like, it is like a lot about the detail stuff. There's, you know, I felt like I was ready for the NBA a couple years sooner than I probably was, or I really started locking out of details. Even at my time in Wisconsin, I was kind of the should have guy. Like, there's a lot of those people that always told me I should have been playing more. I should have done this and I should have done that. We like to give Bo Ryan a hard time that after my 4 years, he was probably glad I was done, because then people would stop telling him how much more I should have been playing. But if they would have seen me on at practice and during workouts and stuff, they would have been like, "Man, no, I don't think he deserves any more time either." I thought I was working hard at the time, but there was other levels that I needed to reach and I needed to get to. And I was kind of the classic example of big guys who sometimes need a little more time, or just certain guys' maturity levels need to increase and to grow and to learn from some failures, some mistakes. And, you know, I definitely had plenty of those throughout the way too.
I'm curious if you can give some examples or some stories of how you handle that with, I think, anybody who's played at a decently high level would be in a situation where they're frustrated because they're not getting what they think they deserve at the time, right? Because we see things through our lens and it's not what the coach's lens is all the time. So I'm curious, some tricks or tools that maybe you help guys with who are, you know, 10, 11, 12 on your bench now with the Spurs, or from when you were playing, to help guys get through, or ladies, players in general, get through, "Hey, how can I keep working so that my coach will recognize me and I can get to where I want to be?"
You know, I think the biggest thing is you got to do, like, I preach on the details a lot, like the details of doing little things the right way. Like sometimes you got to make a certain cut 3, 4, 5 times. Big guys, you got to run the floor every time. You know, and you might not feel like you are doing much, or maybe you don't get the ball very often by doing so, but by you running the floor, it opens up the wings. It, you know, if you set good screens every time, then your point guard gets open. And then after your point guard gets open a few times and the defense shifts and they react to that, then all of a sudden you're open and then they come back. And it's just this give and take. So I'm kind of a stickler for the details in the game of play it the right way and it's going to come back to you. Like, make the right pass. Like, you might have a good look, but if there's a better look from to the corner, like, you have to hit it every time. And, you know, I'm a big believer in if you play the game the right way, it kind of finds a way to reward you on the back end of it. And it can be difficult at times if you're only getting a short run, or, you know, if you like you do things 3, 4, 5 times in a row and it's not going your way. It's like, well, then the 6th time I'm probably is, maybe the 7th time or whatever it is. But so I just feel like there's got to be some consistency in that way, that you stick with playing it the right way. And like I said, it's going to come back to you.
That's a very optimistic outlook, right? It didn't happen now, it'll happen next, right? And continuing to work down that path. But we all know, as a player, even as a coach, frustration sets in and we start to look at it maybe from a negative perspective. So I'm curious if you have like self-talk or triggers of some sort that you use yourself or you use with players to identify, hey, I just went negative, I need to go with that positive.
Yeah, I actually kind of went through a progression as a player. College, it kind of started out like, if I make a mistake, I put my head down. Coach would be on me all the time, like, you know, keep your head up, whatever else. And then when I got to the pros, I didn't necessarily realize it until I got to Boston one time. But then I make a mistake and I kind of look up at the rafters. I'd be like, I'd be so mad, but I kind of look up. And one time Doc stopped practice. He said, Greg, how many championships did the Celtics have? And I kind of looked at him like, God, it's something I probably should know. I was like, 12, 13. I was like, you know, a lot. He was like, oh, I thought you'd have it memorized because you're always looking up at the rafters, looking up at the banners. And I was like, okay, yeah, I guess I probably do that more than I need to, or more than I realize. So that was my even like progression. I started down, went back up, and I needed to find somewhere in the middle of handling some of my frustrations at times. So that's definitely something I've had to work through throughout my career. And, you know, I never always got it right. I think at times, like, I played a little hot as a player. Something always kind of changed when I put a jersey on, where I feel like I'm usually a pretty mild-mannered, even-keeled guy. But then when you start playing competitively, there's a switch that switches over, and had to play with a little bit of fire and a little bit of passion. And I also feel like that's what got me, and that's what led me to some of my success too, is because I didn't back down from guys. I didn't shy away. I tried to embrace the moment, and it put me into some pretty cool spots.
As many listeners know, I spent over 6 years as a general manager at Just the Game Fieldhouse in Wisconsin Dells. I was able to spend time talking hoops with coaches like Tom Izzo, along with high school and youth coaches, in addition to meeting some basketball legends, including my childhood favorite, Sam Elke, who is in the WBCA Hall of Fame and High School Basketball Museum, located at Just the Game Fieldhouse, which is a must visit for any true hoop nerd. They also play host to the WBCA All-Star Games and Coaches Clinic every year. Just the Game hosts over 70 basketball and volleyball tournaments annually and is a great place to play for teams of all ages and ability levels. You can't beat all Wisconsin Dells has to offer in your free time. The Fieldhouse also has two sister companies in Just the Game Impressions and Just the Game Live. Just the Game Impressions specializes in customized screen printing and embroidery and promotional products. They serve businesses, schools, sports teams, and more. Just the Game Live takes pride in providing affordable and simple live streaming solutions for venues or programs of all kinds. Inquire today for more information. For more info on everything Just the Game has to offer, check them out at justthegamefieldhouse.com.
Sideline Interactive delivers digital and LED scoring tables and video boards that generate excitement in your gym and the ultimate game day experience for your players and fans. We provide you the blueprint and the game plan to generate $10,000 or more in sponsorship revenue every year. 95% of our schools generate enough advertising dollars during the first school year to pay for their purchase. Any school or college can qualify for no fee, no interest financing over 2 school years. We're ready and able to deliver your order to you within 3 to 4 weeks. The tables and boards can be used for any indoor sport, as well as watching game film, school assemblies, signing days, or any other event that is held in your gym. Visit sidelineinteractive.com or call 832-786-0302 to schedule a 15 to 30 minute live web demo to see our tables and boards in action and what these fantastic products can do for you. Or email sales@sidelineinteractive.com. A link to sidelineinteractive.com is in the show notes for today's episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's something to be said about, and rule breaking doesn't necessarily fit this right, but not always conforming to what is expected of you all the time. And yeah, people don't always want you to be frustrated or upset, but you know, that is sometimes your competitiveness coming out. So I'm curious, with your competitiveness, you know, whether you're playing pickup on Monday or, you know, you're playing checkers at home, are you driven by the fear of losing that or driven by the joy of winning?
I think it's probably a little bit more of the fear of losing. I think maybe this goes back, and maybe this is a little bit even too deep of a concept, but like, you know, we won a lot when we were growing up. We stepped on a floor, we expected to win. That was basketball, baseball, football, everything. And so, and then when we'd have to compete to win, like obviously somebody had to lose, and none of us were very good losers, and not in a sense of like maybe throw tantrums and everything else, but like we just weren't used to it. Like we never really lost. And I actually remember after our state championship senior year, it was obviously a joyful, like we were happy for accomplishing this goal and to be undefeated that season and overcome stuff. You know, I came back from ACL injury, everything. I just remember at one point I was kind of like, oh, like a little bit relieved. It was like, we did it. You know, we're like, we didn't let everybody down by losing. We didn't, you know, this losing was never a part of what we did. And I think it was more relief than it was like celebration. The first one as a sophomore was a celebration. We weren't necessarily expected to win or to go that far and to do something together as a group to have that success. Obviously, like you want to do nothing but to match that. And in the coming years and the following seasons, we were fortunate enough to do it the next two. So, but I remember after our senior year, it was a little bit more relief, you know, and I think that's a little bit different of a concept at times, and I don't know exactly how to explain it either, but it's just, you know, definitely came with kind of the territory, I think.
I think a lot of people can identify with where you're coming from with that. And it may not, you know, just be in sports, but like, okay, we just accomplished something, you know, from a business perspective, right? And now we're asked to duplicate it again and again and again and again. And that's not easy. You know, they always say winning the first championship is hard, but repeating is even more difficult. And right. And nobody has figured, you know, that exactly out yet. Maybe Coach Heffley's the closest to him winning all the championships that he's won. But, you know, even he will tell you that, you know, it's very difficult to get there. I think most people will be able to identify with the high school to college transition. So let's start there. I'm curious, what's one thing when you moved from Randolph High School to the University of Wisconsin that was like the biggest eye-opening thing that you didn't expect coming when you got there?
I think for me, just the size of the classes and people, you know, from a town of 1,500, my high school had 185 kids in or so when I was growing up. I mean, I still kind of joke with people that I think my senior year of high school, I could have probably driven you to everybody in my high school's house. Like you kind of know where everybody lives. And then you walk into a lecture hall with 650 other kids and thinking you're kind of this, maybe a little bit of arrogance as an athlete, like, oh, I'm on a basketball team. I'm 7 feet tall. I'm kind of, you know, one of one. And then you walk in, you look around, it's like, nobody cares, you know, like there's this huge room and you just a little bit overwhelmed by just the amount of people doing the same thing you are. And then it was kind of like, well, if this room is so big, like I bet the professor doesn't even notice I'm not here. And then you miss a couple times and then it gets a little bit easier. And I think that was with like my struggle with some of my schooling stuff. Like I was never a great student. I kind of would just get by with as little as possible, little effort as possible. And I struggled at times with college just by, you know, being being a little bit arrogant that I could just get by just basic skills. And it was, you know, college was work, and I necessarily wasn't necessarily like willing to put the time in for school that I had, like I needed to, you know, the court stuff, basketball stuff was always priority. And the, you know, the schooling stuff on the side was not as enjoyable for me. And so I didn't take it as serious. And I ultimately paid a price for that too, by being ineligible my sophomore year. So it definitely humbled me quickly and had to learn to figure it out. And there was definitely a stretch there where, you know, I wasn't exactly sure how that was going to play out.
Well, and as athletes, it's interesting because we have to straddle the line of arrogance and confidence. And we want to be confident, but when it starts to move towards that line of arrogance, that's when we have a distortion of reality. The next jump from college to the pros, we all growing up have this idea of playing in the NBA, you know, playing with Kevin Garnett, for example. So I'm curious, what's one thing that you had built up in your mind as something that the NBA is all about that you realize is not the case when you got there?
I think, you know, the hype around some of like the superstars and, you know, we kind of touched on a little bit like the alternate reality. And in a sense, like those guys, I feel like they lived in a little bit alternate reality, you know, being a tall guy, everybody kind of looks over when you walk into a room, or if you duck through the doorway, like everybody's, oh, I bet that guy plays basketball. But when you go have dinner with Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce, like everybody in the restaurant knows so much about them already. And, you know, they have to be on all the time. And, you know, thank goodness we were in a little bit of like the early stages of technology with flip phones and everything else where, you know, everything wasn't shoved in their face or recorded all the time. Not that there was any instances that I can remember that were necessarily bad, but I just couldn't imagine for those guys sake being on all the time. And you just kind of saw a little different side of it. And you know, in a certain way, like you almost felt a little bit bad. Like it was, they just have this skewed version from what I grew up in and even what I was experiencing. So, but at the same time, you know, it's that kind of comes with the industry and with the success they've had. And, you know, obviously it's something that most guys would strive for, to have, you know, a problem like that, that too many people know who they are, too many people know about, too much about them. But, I just think that was always kind of a shock to me, or even the first few times, like I walked in the locker room, it's like, man, I don't know if I'm worthy to be in this kind of company or this kind of a room with these guys, or I'm on the floor with them. And then it was when, I think it was my first game as a starter with Boston. I looked to my left and it's Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. And I looked to my right and it's Rajon Rondo and Ray Allen. And I kind of look in the middle going like, something's wrong here. Like this is one of these things, is not like the other. And, you know, fortunately I get out there and a couple of early baskets of a block shot that leads to a fast break. And then all of a sudden it's like, you take a deep breath. I'm like, this is the same game that I've been playing for a long time. And yeah, the stakes are a little higher, the competition's better, the teammates are better, but it's still the same game. And that was always kind of my perspective reminder that, like, no matter what the stakes are, everything else, like the old Hoosier style, right? Like the baskets are still 10 feet, you know, the free throw lines are the same distance. Three pointers a little bit deeper at this level, but otherwise, you know, it's the same thing that we used to play in the driveway. And,
yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's tell everybody what exactly you're doing with the Spurs now. So, you know, when we're watching the Spurs on League Pass or if they're on mainstream TV, you know, who are you working with and how are you helping the Spurs organization?
So I'm still technically in the Spurs video room. So we're kind of the support level staff. We're the guys kind of behind the scenes doing a lot of stuff for the scout reports. And, you know, we're the guys chasing rebounds before the games and working with the guys and on practice days playing dummy defense and, you know, on the court when they need an extra body. And then during game stuff, I got a few things that I'm tracking live stats during the game. And I've been fortunate these last 15 or 20 games or so to be sitting behind the bench for most games. And then you just get a little better perspective of being able to be essentially in the huddles with Coach Popovich, hearing him yell at the guys, hearing them not yell at the guys, hearing them, you know, work the officials, hearing them just his take throughout the game. So it's been trying to be as much of a sponge as I can, you know, being a little bit of the older side of a video room, or, you know, not being necessarily the young guy on the player side, you know, but now being a young guy on the coach's side, it's definitely been trying to learn as much as I can, absorb it all, and hoping to, you know, take that next step next year.
So you mentioned being behind the bench with Coach Popovich. You got to give me a story, because he's known for his quick reactions. He's pretty witty. Give me your, oh man, this is really, really what Greg Popovich is about moment, where you were ingrained in the Spurs culture because you're now with him.
Well, I think there was a time a few games ago where we just came out flat, and we were missed some shots, missed some passes, you know, didn't get back on defense. Some of these things that we've been talking about now for 50 plus games. And he calls kind of an early timeout, and everybody comes to huddle, and I'm out with the coach for a minute, and he comes over, and everybody just thought, all right, here it comes. Like, here comes the chew out session. And he kind of just calmly just, you guys need to go play better. And that was about it. And it was kind of like, wow. Like, everybody thought there was going to be some F-bombs dropped and somebody getting called out, and it's just, nah, just go play better. And then that was like very calm and reserved. And it was just, you know, or something to that fashion, where it was just kind of caught everybody a little bit like, here's your chance. Here's his chance to like really get on the guys. And then it in a calm way, it was just, and then we went out and played better. Like, it's just his feel for when certain things need to be said and when things don't need to be said, is a reason why he's such a legend. And it was a pretty cool moment to be, you know, on the sideline, even the night that he broke the record of, you know, most wins of all time. And so just, yeah, there's a lot that goes with, you know, being with the Spurs organization, the respect that it's got around the league, and the history of, I don't know if there's too many NBA coaching staffs that don't have somebody that played a part with this team, or coached with somebody for somebody, even like some of the head coaches, you know, Milwaukee's head coach, and I don't even know, I can go Boston's head coach that just left a couple of last year, you know, Charlotte's head coach, like they're all guys that have been in the hallways that I'm working in now. So just to be a part of that has been pretty special.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I'll get you out of here on a non-basketball related question, something a little more lighthearted. Right. So if you could have one superhero power to obtain, what would it be, and what would you do with that superhero power?
Oh, man. Everybody says fly, right? Like, to be a big white guy and, you know, okay athlete, but not really that great, like the true ability to fly, or maybe if there was a way to time travel, like instead of sitting on airplanes and waiting to travel all over, all the times that I've spent back and forth from my family and being gone from everybody, it'd be kind of a nice way just to maybe snap your fingers and be able to teleport or something, to cut off on some layovers and travel and delayed flights and everything else that all over the years I've wasted too much time and by myself or isolated when I could be doing something better, maybe. But
I'm one of our most precious commodities. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
No doubt. Well, Greg, thank you for making the time to come on the Hoop Nerds and share a little bit of your perspective and story with us. And now when people watch the Spurs, they can check for you behind the bench, tracking your stats and keeping Coach Popovich in line.
There we go. Appreciate having me, Billy. It was great to catch up.